Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
There is a field that to our listeners, you may not know that much about, and I'm really excited to learn about medical detection using dogs too. And joining us today is the one and only, my friends, she's here, Dr. Cynthia Otto. How are you, doctor?
I am great. I am very good. Thank you.
Let me just go over a couple of your incredible accolades to the listeners that may not know some of your wonderful achievements. So she is a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Emergency and Critical Care and a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Sports Medicine and Rehabilitation. And she's a professor of working dog sciences and sports medicine at the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine. And she's also the director for the Penn Vet Working Dog Center at UPenn School of Veterinary Medicine. So I can't think of a more incredible person to chat with over the next 20 minutes than about this. So let's get to it, because talk to me a little bit about the field of medical detection. How did it evolve?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. It's a relatively new field, but back in, I think it was maybe 1989, there was a report in Lancet about a physician who actually listened to their client who said, "My dog keeps chewing at this, what's going on?" Turned out it was melanoma. And then it sort of raised the question, is there something that the dog recognizes or understands about this that's abnormal? And not a lot happened after that. But then probably in the early 2000s, a group in the UK started looking at whether or not dogs could identify the odor associated with prostate cancer in urine. And that started a whole group of people in different countries and different areas asking the questions, well, what about different diseases? Are there different odors that are released in response to or as a result of these different diseases? And it turns out for pretty much everything that's been tested so far, there is a unique odor that can be associated with that disease.
And so how do you detect dogs to understand these medical conditions and sniff that out?
That's a great question, because we really have to be pretty smart about how we train the dogs, or we ask the dogs the question, is there something different about this person compared to that person? And whenever we're doing this, we're using samples from people, whether that's urine or blood or saliva or sweat. We're taking samples from individuals. And what our goal is we train the dog on a sample from a known positive, and then we ask the dog, is this different from a sample of a known negative? And what the way that works is this basic training, just like we would train for maybe explosives, in that they smell the sample that we are interested in, and we reward them for that. And then we let them smell a sample that is clearly a negative, that is not going to have an odor of interest if there is one associated with that disease, and they don't get anything. So that they learn, I smell this, and I get a reward. I smell that and I don't. And they're so amazing at processing. They can kind of do this whole figure out, okay, what's in this that's not in this? Now, there's a lot of caveats to that, because if you only have one person with the disease and one person without, you know, say, let's say, you know, Jane has the disease and Sue doesn't, they learn Jane's smell, not the smell of the disease. And so what we have to do is we have to have many different people from different backgrounds that actually have the disease. And similarly, we have to have many different people from different backgrounds that don't, you know, confirm that don't have the disease. So the dogs can start to identify what's common in the diseased people, but not present in the non-diseased people. Because as humans, we smell a lot. We have lots of odors.
So many. I can only imagine. So then what kind of conditions have dogs been used for the medical detection?
So what we've worked on here is ovarian cancer detection has been a big project that we've worked on. We've worked on what we call biofilm infections. So Staph aureus biofilm, typically these are kinds of infections that affect implants, so prosthetic implants. We have also worked on a a cancer called sinonasal inverted papilloma, which is a very unusual one. We have worked on COVID. There are plenty of other groups that have worked on breast cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer. People have worked on Parkinson's, tuberculosis. The list keeps going on and on. It seems like there's probably very little limit to what the dogs are able to detect a signature from. And probably the biggest limit is our ability to train them and make sure we're doing the best job possible.
And so do you think that we're going to see a lot of these dogs in, like, say, every hospital?
No, as a matter of fact, I don't. I think what's really interesting about this is that this is a really great proof of concept. And so what it's telling us is, yes, there's an odor signature. And for the most part, a lot of these then can hopefully be translated to other electronic or chemical sensing devices that can screen hundreds of thousands of people, that can have the reproducibility and repeatability that we really need for medical detection devices. I love the dogs. I love their ability. But I also know that the dogs are limited in their capacity for a couple of reasons. One, this is a lot of brain power it takes for them to screen these. So, you know, we think about even like the TSA screeners at the airport, you know, they can only work for so long when they're doing this repetitive trying, all right, is there something dangerous in this, you know, in this luggage? You know, they can only do that for so long and then they need a break. Same with the dogs. It really does take a lot of focus and concentration. They also can have bad days. And so that would be something that we really need to, you know, how do we make sure the dogs are performing at their optimal level? But the hardest part, I think, is that us as humans, we can mess them up. And so if we're in our training, if we're actually inadvertently giving them shortcuts, then they may not be as good at doing what we want them to do. And it might drift so that they're not necessarily identifying the odor of cancer or the odor of the infection, but they're identifying something else that is kind of moving along with that odor based on the samples that we're using to train them with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Because that's what I was just thinking in my head. I was like, wow, you know, trying to translate this over into real world operational settings, to your point too, like their attention span, distractions, there must be so many other things. Are there other challenges that you're anticipating or can experience?
Well, certainly the personality of the dog, not every dog can do this. Yeah. You know, we know that some dogs are better at focus work. And for us, when we've done our ovarian cancer dogs, the best dogs at that are dogs environmentally sensitive, you know, so dogs that really don't like to have a lot of activity around them. So we do this in a laboratory setting. It's all very isolated. It's all very, you know, clean. Then, you know, you take that and put it in a real world setting, and all of a sudden these poor dogs, their brains explode. You know, it's just too much input, and then they can't do what they need to do.
Yeah, I can only imagine too. It's like sensory overload for some of these dogs too.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's a lot. Definitely, and can be.
I'm sure you have like a set of standards that are in play for these medical detection dogs.
Well, that's a great question. So I sit on a committee with the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, and we have this group called Dogs and Sensors, and we have been working on developing standards for explosive detection dogs, for search and rescue dogs, for all of these other types of dogs. And now this medical detection has really come to the forefront and is one of the newest standards that we're working on trying to create. In addition, internationally, there are people who are trying to address, you know, some of these issues of how do we make sure that we are all working to the highest standard.
Yeah, I can only imagine. You got to have such high standards for that. And so to our listeners that are tuning in and saying, wow, I'd like to get my dog enrolled, or, you know, this sounds interesting. How can they find more information about this, and where can they go?
Well, I think the first thing that people in the community should think about doing is just playing the game of canine nose work or some of these scent detection, you know, see if their dog likes it. A lot of dogs really thrive on using their noses, and we have taken away a lot of the requirements for them to use their noses. So this is a great opportunity to bond with your dog, to do some training, to stimulate their your dog's brain. We have had some dogs that we call our citizen science dogs who have been trained in this kind of sport that have come in and worked with us on some of our projects. It's a very small group, and obviously they have to live in Philadelphia or close to be able to participate. And, you know, that is something that eventually we would love to be able to have more opportunities, but it's at this point still pretty limited. But the sport side of things is just wonderful for dogs and for their humans.
Right. Fascinating. I enjoy watching it. I really do. I think it's incredible. And where can we learn more about the Penn Vet Working Dog Center?
So probably the two best places are our website, www.vet.upenn.edu/WDC, so Working Dog Center. And our Facebook page, we also have a Twitter account and Instagram account, and we've got lots of great videos and photos and activities that we share.
Incredible, incredible. I know I'm speaking on behalf of the profession too. Thank you for all that you do. This is such an incredible field, fascinating, rapidly growing, and much needed. How timely is this, right? This program that you have, my goodness.
Yeah, no, I feel privileged to be able to work in this area. It's just such a treat, and you know, so cool that as veterinarians, we can do so many important things.
We really, really can too. Just another reason that I love this profession, my friends, and to the listeners, is that, you know, there's such versatility within this profession, and this is such a great example of that. So thank you so much for all that you do too, Dr. Cynthia Otto. My goodness, what an honor was to chat with you.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. It's super fun. Time went way too fast.
Goes by so fast, right? I know. Thank you so much. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Please stay safe out there. Continue to take care of all those incredible animals, and always stay pawsome. Take care, everybody. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.